Welcome to another Biology on the Beach. This is Dr. Leo Stauder, and this is Chemistry Part 4. This should conclude our talk on chemistry. Hold on, let me move away a little bit from the waves here. We're here in beautiful Dania Beach, and we're going to be talking about the carbon atom today, as well as other things. When we look at the carbon atom, we see that all living things will be containing carbon, and the reason is because carbon has those four bonding sites, if you remember. So carbon plays well with others. All things that contain carbon are considered organic compounds. So you've heard a lot about organic farming. That's because they use a lot of carbon-based materials, such as manure. Inorganic compounds do not contain carbon, so you would not be farming organically if you used, like, Miracle-Gro, for instance, because all that has in it is just the three components that plants need, which is nitrogen, phosphorus, and potash, I think the other one is. So those are the only three components, and you notice there's no carbon in there. So this would be fertilizers that would be organic, would not be these kind of inorganic compounds that we just mentioned. Also, carbon has those four bonding sites, as we said. This makes carbon very versatile. This also makes carbon stable. If you remember, we have our four bonding sites, so that means that the outer shell will be filled, and if it's going to be filled, then that's going to be a stable molecule. So carbon is considered the backbone of living things. And that's why there's a lot of talk about the hydrocarbons that are being created in our atmosphere. Those are going to be fundamental for living things anyways, though. They get a bad rap because they're in our atmosphere. But they are, hydrocarbons are really going to be a backbone of who we are as individuals. So when we look at the carbon atom, we see that we have those six protons and six neutrons. And we also have, of course, six electrons, because we know that carbon's atomic number is 6. Very good. Now, if we take a atom and put it together with another atom, we get a molecule. And it's possible to put a bunch of molecules together in succession and come out now with a macro or big molecule. So macromolecules are going to be big molecules. They're going to be combinations of carbon and hydrogen and other components as well to create their structure. So if you take a long chain of carbons and add hydrogens to them, you've just created a lipid. Now, a lipid is going to be a fat. So a long carbon chain is going to be a lipid or a fat. If we take a carbohydrate, which would be a ring of carbons. So if we put our carbons and arrange them into rings, we now have created a carbohydrate. A protein is also going to be a hydrocarbon. And a protein is going to be composed of amino acids. And amino acids are going to have the shape of like an N. It looks like an airplane with luggage. So if you have an airplane and then you have below underneath and its belly is going to be where the luggage will be. That's called the R group. That gives the plane, or shall we say the amino acid, its character. Now the nucleic acids are going to be something we're going to talk about more later extensively, but for now we can just introduce them as DNA, which you're familiar with, RNA, which I'm sure you're familiar with, and ATP, which you may have heard of. DNA and RNA are responsible for genetics. They're also responsible for creating protein, whereas ATP is our energy source for our cells. So DNA stands for deoxyribonucleic acid. So that's why we get the DNA. That's where we get the DNA from. And notice that NA is nucleic acid, just like in RNA. The NA is nucleic acid as well. So that's why we call these nucleic acids. ATP will have a base in there. The adenine is the A. That's why we consider it a nucleic acid as well. Now, when we put one molecule with another molecule and another molecule, another molecule, we make a macromolecule. But just one part is called a monomer. many, many parts put together is called a polymer. So we have monomer and we have polymer. You may have heard of polyester. Polyester is going to be material that was created from putting a bunch of esters together. That's why they call it polyesters. So if we have just one part, we call it a monomer. Put a bunch of monomers together, you get a polymer or a macromolecule. So what's the monomer of a lipid? The monomer of a lipid is a fatty acid. These are monomers that form the polymer called lipid. So a fatty acid is going to be the fundamental component of a fat. So if you break fats down into their component parts, you'll see that they're going to be called fatty acids. Now, carbohydrates are a macromolecule composed of many monomers of saccharides. And a saccharide is going to be a sugar. You know about saccharin, that artificial sweetener. And that's where they get the word from, because it means sweet, I guess, or it means sugar. So saccharin, in this case we'll call it saccharides, are going to be the monomers that form the polymer called carbohydrates, or the macromolecule. So if we break carbohydrates down in their component parts, we'll see that that's going to give us individual saccharides. Now, a protein, as we already mentioned, has its basic fundamental units being amino acids. So if we take a bunch of amino acids and put them together, then we form the polymer called a polypeptide. So the polypeptide is the macromolecule. We also call that polypeptide a protein. So if you take a protein and you break it down into its component parts, you'll see those component parts will be individually called amino acids. So to make a protein, you put a bunch of amino acids together. To make a carbohydrate, you put a bunch of saccharides together. To make a lipid, you put a bunch of fatty acids together. So in thinking of this, we know that we have the monomer of lipids being a fatty acid. The polymer is going to be a lipid. Carbohydrate, we have the monomer being a saccharide. The polymer is going to be the polysaccharide. And then the monomer of a protein is the amino acid, whereas the polymer is going to be a polypeptide. Now, you may ask, why is it called a polypeptide? Why isn't it called a polyamino, or something like that? Well, the reason that is because the bond between two amino acids is called a peptide bond. So if you have two amino acids stuck together, you're going to have one peptide bond. You're going to have three amino acids put together, you're going to have two peptide bonds, or a polypeptide, right? So that's why they call it polypeptides. Now, to make a monomer, to make a polymer, we need to combine a bunch of monomers. And to take apart a polymer, we need to then break it down into its monomers. So if we want a polymer, we got to get a bunch of monomers together. And if we want to break down a polymer, we need to break them down into their separate monomers. So to combine a lot of monomers, we use a condensation reaction, and we lose water. To take apart a polymer, we do just the opposite. We add water. This process is called hydrolysis. So the two processes are condensation and hydrolysis. So when we consider a polymer of a lipid, remember a lipid is a chain. So because it's a chain, we consider this guy to be a lipid. Now if you look at the word lipid, you see there's a big I in lipid. So think of a long chain being a lipid. We look at a carbohydrate, and we see that we have the O in the carbohydrate. That O tells us that it's going to be in the shape of a ring. So our carbons are going to be arranged in a ring. Now, the protein, as we already said, has an N in it. So it has a big N, and that's going to be then the shape of our protein as well. Sort of like looks like an N on its side, or an N upside down. So when we consider how to make a polymer, a lipid, a carbohydrate, nucleic acid, or a protein, we have to consider the condensation reaction. So the real operative thing here is what goes on with water. If we lose water, then we connect monomers together to make a polymer. If we add water, we break them apart. So therefore, we break them down into their component parts, into their monomers. So let's take fat, for instance. If we eat too many carbohydrates, your body will convert those carbohydrates into fat for storage. Now, carbohydrates are ring-shaped, so they don't store as well as the flat fat. Fat is flat. It's sort of like trying to store a bunch of pencils, and they're all round. You're not going to get as many pencils in one spot as you could get pieces of paper. Because pieces of paper, you can just put right on top of each other because they're flat. So fat is going to be, or lipids are going to be a great way of storing energy. So how do you store energy? Well, you would have to break down the carbohydrates somehow, right? So how do you break down carbohydrates? Of course, you would add water to it. You add water, and that's going to take apart that polymer. Same thing with if you want to break down fat, like in some weight loss programs, they want you to drink a lot of water just to facilitate hydrolysis, because that's going to break the bonds of the fat molecule. So it's going to break it into smaller monomers, so it can break it down, so you can get rid of it. So what does your body do? Well, if it has too much carbohydrate, it will create a condensation reaction. We're going to be losing water, and you're going to be storing it in those carbohydrates as fat. And once again, the opposite can occur, where you can just add water and then break those polymers as well. So condensation is sort of goes like this. This is the kind of the reaction. You have A plus B equals AB. So you take A and you add B and you get AB. But in hydrolysis, you got AB and then you break it down into A and B. The reaction works better if we use enzymes. And enzymes are going to be proteins that facilitate reactions. So if we look at a carbohydrate, we know a carbohydrate by its shape. It's going to be shaped like a ring. And that carbohydrate is going to have an OH on the outside of the ring. If we take two carbohydrates and put them side by side, we'll see we'll have an OH and an OH. If we have an OH and an OH, and we use one of the oxygens to actually bond the two carbohydrates together, we'll have left over an H, an O, and an H, or H2O. So that's going to be the condensation reaction, where we actually lose water and we then create a polymer or a macromolecule. Hydrolysis then would be going just in the opposite way. We have our macromolecule or our polymer, and now we will take water out or subtract water, we'll add water to it. As we add water to it, this then will allow for the bonds to break and for the individual monomers to just be individuals now because we added water to the process. It's called hydrolysis. Now, if we look at the word hydro, we already know what that means. We know it means water. The lysis part is going to be breaking. So this is literally water breaking something apart. So hydrolysis is the other reaction that we have. So a good analogy would be if you were to look at two people that are very affectionate towards each other in a car. See, these two people that like each other very much, and after a while of them being together in the car, the windows will become fogged up. That's because there's condensation being produced on the windows from water, right? From their breath. So you have this condensation on the windows, and that's bringing two people together. So think of condensation as bringing two people together or two things together, two components together. Now the people in the neighborhood see this activity. They decide to do something about it. So they call the fire department. The fire department comes out, and these two lovers are together, and they turn the hose on them. The water, of course, separates them. This would be then the example of hydrolysis. I hope you like that. I don't know. So we have three carbohydrates. We have a simple, we have a short chain, and a complex carbohydrate. And you may have heard of complex carbohydrates because they're touted as being better than the simple carbohydrates. Complex carbohydrates would be such things as starch, which we get from plants, cellulose, which we can get from whole grains, glycogen, which is going to be the real energy storage for our animals, immediate energy storage in us. If we store too much glycogen, it becomes fat. And then chitin is what's on the outside of bugs. So chitin, spelled C-H-I-T-I-N, is probably why some cultures eat bugs, because the outside is actually a carbohydrate, so you may get some sweetness there. So if we look at a simple carbohydrate, we call them a simple sugar. We call them monosaccharides. The mono means, of course, one. So it's one sugar. Glucose is an example. Also fructose is another example of a simple carbohydrate. Sucrose would be considered a short-chained carbohydrate. This would be just combining glucose and fructose together. So you have your monosaccharides, put two monosaccharides together, and you get sucrose, or common table sugar. And this then would be considered a short chain. But to get a more complex carbohydrate, you need to have a number of carbohydrates put together. Through what process? Condensation. Very good. Now our lipids. Our lipids are short chains of carbons, as we've mentioned. And you get a phospholipid, which are important in the cell covering. So all of our cells have phospholipids. So that means there's a phosphate with a fat group. Steroids are also lipids. They're also found in the cell covering as well. Steroids are composed of four carbon rings put together. So steroids. Some weightlifters will take steroids to help them bulk up, which is a dangerous practice. Lipids can also be saturated or unsaturated. Either saturated with hydrogen or not saturated with hydrogen. That's what the term saturated means. So a saturated fat is going to be a fat that's going to be saturated with hydrogens. So picture a chain of carbons. Let's just pick six carbons. Put six carbons, connect them together by one dash. That one dash would represent a what kind of bond? Good. That would be a covalent bond. So a covalent bond would be connecting each of the six carbons. So you put C, and then put a dash, C, another dash, C, another dash, C, another dash, and like that. So now you have six carbons put together with five dashes. Now that only gives each carbon in the middle two bonding sites, and we know that carbon has four. So each of the carbons in the middle, we want to add two bonding sites to it above and below. So put two dashes there and put an H and an H. The two carbons on the end, we want to put three H's so that every carbon has four bonding sites. Now notice that this is a chain of six carbons and it has six hydrogens around it. We would call this then a saturated fat for our purposes. We would call it a saturated fat. Now, if we were to add double bonds, now a double bond is something that we didn't mention, but it is going to be a covalent bond, but there's going to be sharing not just one electron, but two. So to share two electrons is an option for carbon. So let's take all of our dashes out and put in equal signs instead. So two dashes, one on top of the other. If we do that, we'll have five equal signs. Each carbon now in the middle does not need any hydrogen because each carbon in the middle has four bonding sites. The carbon on the outside needs just two, and the carbon on the other side needs just two bonding sites as well. So put two hydrogens on the outside with these carbons, and you'll see that each carbon now has four bonding sites. That is called an unsaturated fat. Why? because you're not saturated with carbons, because you have your double bonds. You may have heard of omega-3, omega-6, omega-9 oils. These tell us that there are double bonds in the fat. So these are unsaturated fats. They don't have all the carbons. You can take a saturated fat, sorry, you can take an unsaturated fat like palm oil, not palm oil, unsaturated fat like safflower oil, and irradiate it with hydrogens. This now becomes a saturated fat, but it's not a good fat. It's a bad fat. And that would be considered a trans fat. So you take a good oil and you make it turn wrong. A good oil like safflower oil, and you irradiate it with artificially with hydrogens, making it into a saturated fat, and you get margarine is basically what you get. And that's a trans fat, and that's not good for you. It's better to have saturated fat, better to have regular butter than have trans fats, most experts would say. So when we look at a saturated fat, we see it has certain components. It is going to be solid at room temperature, usually. And an unsaturated fat is going to be liquid at room temperature. It's more of an oil. So to remember this, just remember that unsat sun and sat unsun. So unsaturated comes from the sun or from plants. Saturated fat comes from the unsun or the non-plants or animals. So all saturated fats come from animals. So we think of lard from pigs. We think of beef fat from cows. We think of chicken fat. All those are going to be coming from animals. There is an exception to this rule, however, and that is coconut and palm oils are plant oils that come from plants, but they are saturated fats. So that those are the two exceptions. So if we review, we'll see that a saturated fat comes from an animal. It also is going to be solid at room temperature. Unsaturated, it's going to come from a plant. It's going to be liquid at room temperature. And as we mentioned about hydrogenated oils, they're not good for you. And fats are incorporated into your cell membrane so that trans fats disrupt the normal cell function. They can cause such things as headaches, joint pain, back pain, arthritis, skin problems, PMS, menstrual cramps, cancer, heart disease, and even stroke, possibly. Well, how do you know if you have a trans fat? It'll say on the package, and usually these are packaged foods. Trans fats looks like natural fats, but they can't be superimposed. If we were to take your left hand and your right hand, they sort of look alike. But if you put one hand on the other, you'll see that the thumb sticks out on one side, the thumb sticks out on the other. So functionally, they're not the same. One fat would be considered a cyst, C-I-S, fat. The other one would be called a trans fat. The cyst is good, the trans is not. So proteins. An amino acid is a monomer of a protein. There are 20 amino acids and 9 are essential for us. What does that mean, essential? We have to have 9 of these amino acids so that we can make the other 20 or the other 11. So that's why we call them essentials, because they're essential for us to keep alive. So if we have these essential 9, we can make the other 11. And how do we make these other 11? Well, as we said, the amino acid structure is sort of like an airplane with a cargo. And that cargo is going to be called the R group. So if we have the cargo being changed, it's going to change our amino acid. The R group changes for each amino acid. But the amino and the carboxyl group, or the airplane, does not change. So, for instance, if we want to make glycine, we have the normal airplane, the amino part, the amino and the carboxyl part. We add then just one hydrogen, and now we get glycine. If we added 3 carbons, we have a different amino acid called valine. So you can see just by changing the R group, you change the amino acid. So if we have a bunch of amino acids and we put them together, we call this a protein. The proteins are named after the bond that form between each amino acid, which is called a peptide bond. The simplest polypeptide that we know of, or the simplest macromolecule called a protein, is insulin, which consists of 51 amino acids put together. Insulin is very important for blood sugar metabolism. Those that have a lack of insulin, of course, have the disease called diabetes. So when polypeptides form, they create a primary structure called a primary structure. That's the first structure. Then they go into a second structure called the secondary. The third structure is called a tertiary. The fourth structure is called a quaternary. These are precise foldings of the amino acids into the protein. Blood protein is called hemoglobin. The globin is the protein portion. The heme portion is actually the portion that's going to be bonding to oxygen, so it can carry that. If hemoglobin doesn't become in its proper shape due to a gene defect, for instance, it can no longer carry oxygen. The cell then will be oddly shaped, like a sickle. So we'll call this sickle cell anemia. So a problem with the blood protein and hemoglobin, with its shape, it doesn't allow it to go to the primary, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary form. Because it doesn't get to the right shape, then the cell is sickled and not in this nice round shape, like a nice big donut, like it should be. So we have a number of varieties of proteins. Amino acids can be created to make enzymes, hormones, antibodies, and even structural proteins. Your body is almost totally protein. So if you look at anything in your body, from your hair to your nails to your bones, it's all going to be in a structural protein sort of backbone, if you will. Antibodies that are used to fight infection are proteins. The hormones are chemical messengers that are proteins. And enzymes that we talked about, which facilitate reactions, are going to be all proteins as well. So we see that proteins are very significant and important in our body. So that concludes our talk on chemistry. And this is Dr. Leo Stauder saying, we'll see you later and talk to you again with Biology on the Beach. Bye now.